Where we are at is essentially the beginning of Perek Gimel. But we're sort of the end of Perek Bet first. Actually, I'm going to jump into this source page. The last thing we did was it was Perek Bet. And Perek Bet was this sort of combined effort of Kohelet to look at all the various challenges of aspects of his life and of his world. And we talked about the three pillars of Kohelet and Shlomo HaMelech and the Beit HaMikdash, and the kind of combined effort that collapses because he's frustrated that nothing lasts. And this is where we ended up. Sort of the last pasuk was of the previous piece was Pasuk Chaf Gimel. So we're really starting from Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Pasuk Chaf Dalet, in many ways, and we've talked about the fact that there is a disconnect between the chapter divisions and the content of Kohelet. Unclear why, but there are places where it's less obvious and open to interpretation, and there are places where it's very obvious that the chapter division makes really no sense. There's not much I can add to that. It's just part of the challenge of Kohelet is deciphering who's speaking when and where the divisions and subjects begin. So assuming that we're going to pick up from Perek Bet, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, and continue straight into Perek Gimel. So on the source page, I put this all on one page, and I've actually copied over the text here and structured it a little bit. I'll come back to that in a moment, but for now, I want to just work off this text. Says Kohelet, Ein tov ba'adam shiyochal v'shata v'herat napsho tov ba'amalo. Now, even just translating is complicated because we've talked about the fact that translations and comment are in fact commentaries, and very often you have ambiguous phrases that need to be interpreted before you can translate. And so if I translate, if I try to translate literally, it is not good, ein tov, for man to eat and drink and to enjoy his labor, ve'erat nafsho tov ba'amalo. And yet the sentiment of this text is the other way around, is that there is not that it's not good, but that there's nothing better. Ein tov me'asher. Yeah, right. There's nothing better than. And the reason why that is the case is we'll see. First of all, he ends with a positive note. Ki ra'iti ki miyad ha'elokim hi, for that is a gift from God. It's a hand from God. And number two, we'll see that Kohelet will repeat that phrase over and over again. Ein tov bam ki im. Here, I'll show you another example in Perek Gimel. In Pasuk Yudbet, Yadati ki ein tov bam ki im lismoach v'lasot tov b'chayav. There is nothing better than to rejoice and to do good and to as one lives. And similarly, at the end of this parak, Pasuk Chabet, Ve'iti ki ein tov me'asher yismach ha'adam b'masav. There is nothing better than that man should rejoice in his deeds and in his achievements. Ki u'chalko, that is his portion. And so clearly this is a chapter that talks about simcha on various levels. In simcha, ochel, enjoyment, physical pleasure. And so that is more or less why the Mefarshim and the translations all see that theme beginning here in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, even though the text is a little bit ambiguous. Ein tov ba'adam sheyochal v'shata ve'erat nafsho tov ba'amalo. Nothing for a man better than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy his labor, also known as eat, drink, and be merry. Right? The other half of that phrase, of course, is not here. We'll come to that in a minute. Gam zora iti ani, kimi yad elokim hi. This I also saw is from the hand of God. Kimi yochalu miyachush chutz mimeni. Who is going to eat and enjoy? Who's going to feel the pleasure? Modern day Hebrew has the word chush in terms of senses. Right? Who is going to enjoy? Who is going to feel the enjoyment more than me? So I might as well enjoy it because that's what it's here for. Yiladam shetov lefanav, for a man who is good before God? Natan chokhma v'dat v'simcha. God has given him wisdom and knowledge and joy. V'lachote, and as for the sinner, Natan inyan lesof v'lichnos. God has given him the challenge of working and toiling and gathering and making all that produce. Latet liftov lifnei Elokim. In order to give it to the one who pleases God. From a certain vantage point, Zehevel Utruach, this could be vanity, but from a certain vantage point, if you are the Tov, Lefanav, if you are the one who is good before God, then that is very advantageous because you get all of the simcha that the Chote has to make in order to provide it for you. We're not finished. We are jumping right into Perek Yomo. L'chol zman, ve'et l'chol chefetz tachat ha-shamayim. There is a time, a season, and a time for everything under the heavens. Now, actually, I want to stop and pause for 1 second about that verse, because I can't resist the temptation to acknowledge the incorrect way in which that verse is sung. For anybody who is familiar with the song we used to sing in camp and in kumzitzes, L'kolzma ve'et l'chol, etc. It's one of those songs that seems to distort the text for some odd reason. There is no phrase that says L'kol zman ve'et. There is for everything. There is a time and season. That's not what the phrase says. It says L'kol zman, for everything there is a zman. Ve'et l'chol chefetz tachat ha-shamayim, and there is a time for every desire, every purpose under the heavens. We'll come back to that phrase. And now we have what is referred to often as Shir Ha'itim, the song of the times, or the song of the seasons. One can see the song layout much better if you look at this without the Hebrew, the English translation, because then you can see that there is a kind of a structure to this section of the text. And that structure is very much one of a Shira. You don't even see it here as much as you see it if you look at a printed Tanakh. And so on the layout that I shared with you in the source page, I kind of gave you the layout that appears in the Tanakh, where this is literally in two lines, columns lining up. This is your classic song or poetry or shira in Tanakh. L'kozman ve'et l'chol chefetz tachat ha-shamayim. There is a season and a time for every purpose under the sun. Et la'ledet, time to be born, et la mut, time to die, et la ta'at, et la kornatua, time to plant, a time to uproot that which has been planted. Et la rog ve et lirpo, a time, actually I was in this text, sorry about that. Et la rog ve et lirpo, a time to kill and a time to heal. Et lifots ve et livnot, time to break down, a time to build up. Et livkot ve'et lishok, a time to weep, a time to laugh. Et sfod ve'et rekod, a time to mourn, time to dance. Et lashlich avanim, et knos avanim, time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together, meaning to build. Et lachavok ve'et lirchok mechabek, a time to embrace, and a time to push away or to refrain from embracing. Et levakesh ve'et la'abed, a time to seek, a time to lose. Et lishmor, time to keep, to preserve, and a time to throw or cast away. Et likroa, time to tear, ve'et litpor, a time to sow. Et lachashot, ve'et ledaber, a time to be silent, and a time to speak. Et lehov, ve'et lisno, time to love, time to hate. Et milchama, ve'et shalom, a time for war, and a time for peace. Just that whole passage, that whole shira could be a subject of discussion in itself, and it's actually quite timely. My purpose here is not to enter into the realm of homiletic and drashot, but to look at it in the context of the pshat of the perek. And from the pshat of the perek, it is a challenging text because it's unclear what its message is. What is Kohelet trying to say in this song? And why do I need it in this formula as a song? That's an open question I'll come back to. I want to finish the parak first, though. Ma yitron ha'oseh basher hu amel. What profit does one have in all the work that he toils in? What does he gain? I've seen the matter which God has given to man to afflict him with, to be afflicted with, to be pained by. Everything God made in beautiful in its time. It's also one of those phrases that has become a somewhat controversial translation, because it's often translated as the world has been placed inside their hearts. But as I've shared with you in the past, and Ibn Ezra makes it very clear in this particular instance, there is no such word. The word olam in Tanakh never means world. It's used in rabbinic language to mean world, olam hazeh, olam haba, this world, the next world. In Tanakh, the word olam always means eternity. It's never used in a different context. It's a use of rabbinic language versus biblical language. Chazal referred to that as the idea of Lashon Mikra Luchud, Lashon Chachamim Luchud, that a language changes over time, and the words that mean one thing in Tanakh can mean another thing in the language of rabbinic Hebrew many centuries later. Ibn Ezra writes this quite clearly in Source 1. He writes, Milat olam b'chol hamikra lomatzanu ki'im al zman v'netzach. The word olam is found in all of Scripture to mean time and eternity. He quotes a couple of examples. And so the translation here, I think, is correct. God has placed eternity in our hearts, meaning that man thinks he lives forever. That's how Ibn Ezra understands it. God is in control. God has made everything perfect and beautiful in its time. He has placed eternity in our hearts, meaning we think we live forever. And so man cannot understand the work that God has done from beginning to end. There's an aspect of the way God runs the world that man simply cannot understand. He focuses on his own world and his own experiences. Yadati ki ein tov bam ki im lismach v'lasot tov b'chayav. I know, therefore, that there is nothing better for a man to do than to rejoice and to good as one lives. Begam kol adam sheyachal v'shata, and is also as far as every man who eats and drinks, v'ra'a tov b'chol amalo, and is able to enjoy the good of his labor, matata lokimi, that is a gift of God. Yedati kol asher yaseh alokim u'yeh le'ol. I know that whatever God does shall go, shall exist forever. One cannot add to it, one cannot detract from it. God has done all of this so that man should fear him. What was, will be, what will be, was. God will seek the one who is pursued. Indeed, additionally, I have seen under the sun that in the place of justice there is wickedness, in the place of righteousness there is wickedness. And I said, you know what? God will judge the righteous and the wicked. But there is a time and a purpose for everything there. I said in my heart, as for the Son of Man, as for men, as for human beings, God tests them. That they may see that they themselves are like animals. In what way? Because in the end, just as men, animals die, people die. As this one dies, that one dies. One spirit to both of them. Man has no advantage over animals. All is vanity. Everything goes to one place. Everything starts as dust. Everything ends as dust. Mi yodeh ruach bnei adam olei lamala, b'ruach habeimah yoredeti lamata la'aretz. Who knows the spirit of man, whether it goes up, the spirit of animals, whether it goes down. And therefore, ra'iti ki ein tov me'asher yismach adam b'masav, ki uchako. Therefore, I said, there's nothing better that man should do than to rejoice in his work. Ki mi yevi'enu lirot b'mashiach alav. For who can bring him to see that which will be after him? Perek Dalid begins, Vishavti ani. I then turned and saw. And so, by that point already, somebody else is speaking. We'll leave this at Perek Bet. So there's a lot to unpack here, and the biggest challenge we're going to have is that there seems to be different modes or different moods to this text. In some places he's very pessimistic, in some places he's very optimistic, in some places he's very religious and spiritual, in other places he's very deterministic and not religious. So we have not spiritual. So we have a lot to figure out in terms of what is going on in this parak. And the first most important question that we need to ask is, who is speaking? So for now, I'm going to jump back to this text here, which you should have on the source page. And just in case anybody joined us now, let me repost the, So this is the same perek. I've just included the whole text that I just read from beginning to end in one page, and I've highlighted certain texts, certain phrases, which we will come back to. But the most important question is, after this crisis in which the combined effort of the Chacham and the Nahanatan and the Amal, after the combined effort of all of the personalities of Shlomo combined, the builder and the king and the one who accomplishes and the one who builds and the one whose philosophy and the Chacham Mikol Adam and the one who enjoys, after all of that collapses, literally collapses, at the end of Shlomo's life, Shlomo takes a very dramatic turn. And in this particular text, he starts us on the journey that will become the major theme or the major journey of Kohelet, which is to look at each text or each personality, I should say, by itself. And so the question becomes, in the first question we will have to address in every chapter that we study, in every unit, is who's speaking. And we're going to assume we have one of four possibilities, because we've already identified the personalities of Kohelet, the Yirei Elokim, the Ne'natan, one who enjoys, right, the one who's designed to receive and enjoy the pleasures of this world, the Chacham, the philosopher who is exploring, examining this world from the outside, and the Boneh, or the Amal, who is building, who is creating, who is trying to change, trying to establish himself in this world. I think it is clear from the opening text that in this particular case, the one who is speaking seems to be, but that is a caveat, it seems to be the one who is looking to enjoy this world. Ein tov ba'adam shiyochal v'shata ve'rat nafsho tov ba'amalo. Nothing better for man that he should eat, drink, and enjoy. Ve'rat nafsho tov. His soul should enjoy this labor. And that's the theme that runs through from beginning, and it has different dimensions, different aspects of what it means to enjoy this world, and that's something which we'll see that transition, but the theme of the conclusion, therefore, to receive and to benefit from this world seems to be a theme that carries through from the beginning of this text, which is Pasuk Chav Dalet and Perek Bet, Ein Tov Adam Shiyachal V'Shata Yerat Nafshal Tov Ba'Malon, nothing better than one should eat and drink and enjoy this world. A little bit further in Perek Gimel, he says the same thing in Psukim Yud Bet and Yud Gimel. Yadati ki ein tov bam ki im lismach v'lasot tov b'chayav. I know there is nothing better than to rejoice and to do good as they live. also the gam kol adam sheichal v'shatav v'ra'at to b'chol amlo matat elokim hi. I know that whoever does this, enjoys this world, that is a gift of God. Right? And then at the very end, he says it again, v'ra'iti ki en tov me'ashe yismach adam b'ma'asav ki yuchako. I know that there is nothing better that man should be able to do than to rejoice in his work, for that is his portion. So from beginning, middle, and end, I have a very clear kind of line of thinking, and of the four personalities that we have so far identified, clearly that is the most obvious, right? The notion of the Nehenatan, as we've called him, the hedonist, or the one whose desire is to enjoy the benefits of this world. Part of that, and it's going to be part of our challenge, is if I look at his conclusion, v'ra'iti ki ein tov me'ashe yismach adam b'ma'asav, and I ask, why is it that he is looking to enjoy this world? His conclusion is, kimi v'yenu lirot b'mashiach abath, because you cannot know what's coming next. Who is going to know what the future is going to hold? So you might as well enjoy it now. And you get this extraordinary sense that Kohelet is challenged by this moment of death, right? Which is a shadow which is haunts Kohelet. But the death of the animal, the death of the human being is the same. And therefore, since everything is going to one place, which eventually is the grave, everything was dust, everything is will return to dust. Therefore, the conclusion is, eat, drink, and be merry. There's, I said to you at the beginning when I quoted that famous quote, that the other half of that phrase is missing, right? There you have it. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. There you have it. Ein tov me'ashe yismach adam b'ma'asav. Who's going to bring a person, going to enable a person to see what's going to come after him? So you might as well take the moment and enjoy it and benefit from it. Kind of a philosophy that's referred to or called, nowism. The notion that enjoy the moment, enjoy this, because you never know what's coming, you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. And therefore, there only really is right now where you can enjoy what we have. Ein tov ba'adam sheyich ela sheyichal v'shuta. I'm sure I'm not the only one who is a little uncomfortable with that philosophy or that perspective, especially articulated in such a graphic and dramatic fashion as to suggest that there's no future, there's no spiritual context. I jumped to the wrong source at the end of this page. There's no context, there's no spiritual dimension here. It's just eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. Ki ein tov me'ashe yismach adam b'ma'asav ki yu chalko, ki mi yevienu lirot b'mashiyeh acharav. Nothing better than a man should rejoice in his works, for that is his entire portion, for who could bring him to see what will be after him. That's one part of this text. On the other hand, there is not an insignificant amount of spiritual depth to this particular passage. And you can see it on two levels. If you remember, I'm going to actually just stop sharing for one second. If you remember our discussion at the beginning, we talked about the fact that how do we identify the transition points between one speaker and another? How do we know when Kohelet moves from the Chacham to the Amal to the Nehenatan, right, from one speaker to the next? And there are clues. And one of those clues is very often Kohelet will take a dramatic change in form of speech. He'll go from first person to second person to third person in a dramatic moment. So that's already one indication that those dramatic forms of speech tell me that somebody else is speaking. And the other is by theme, by content. And if I'm looking for a spiritual content, then I would be looking for something that includes God's name or includes a reference to God or includes some kind of spiritual aspect to life. The description in chapter 2, which was all egotistical and all sort of self-centered, where he talked about the 93 uses of the first person. I built and I planted and I created and I did this and I did that. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. There's no room for God in that passage, right? There's no reference to God at all in a description of a world in which I am the center of the universe. On the other hand, if I look at this text, which, again, on the one hand, seems to be very self-centered and very egotistical. Right? He's talking about his benefit and what pleasure that he can derive and eat and drink and be merry, for tomorrow you may die kind of philosophy. On the other hand, there are many references to Hashem, to God, to Elohim, scattered throughout this text. And if you look at it from the very beginning, for example, Pasuk Chavav, just start from the beginning. Ki l'adam shetov, actually from the very Pasuk of Dalet, Ein tov ba'adam sheyechal v'shetav erat nafshot tov ba'amalo, there's nothing better for man than to eat and drink and enjoy. Gam zo ra'iti ani ki miyad ha'elokim hi. I see that this is from God. This is a gift from God. This is from the hand of God. In other words, I'm enjoying this world, but I'm enjoying it because God gave it to me. Right? It's not for me. Who is it for? God is giving me this to enjoy. Not only that, there are two kinds of people in this world. There is the chote, and there is the Adam Shetov Lefanav. There is the person who is righteous, who is good before God, and there's the person who is the sinner. And they each have a different task. The sinner's task is to collect and to amass and to create and to provide for whom? To give to the one who is good before God, right? So the person who is good before God, he gets to benefit from the world, and the sinner is going to have to do all the work in order to provide it to the person who is good. It's a very kind of harsh dichotomy of the world. On the other hand, there is a sense of emunah, there's a sense of God's role in this story, which needs to be unpacked, which needs to be understood. Similarly, in Pasuk Yud, this world has been given to us by God. God has done everything beautiful in its time. We're going to come back to that in a moment with the song in a second. Even eternity, even though man thinks he's going to live forever, hides from him the fact that God runs this world. And he comes back to his conclusion that there is nothing better than to eat and to drink and to enjoy this world because it is a matat elokimi, because it is a gift from God. And so you have this constant sense that yadati koshi yaseh elokim uyeli olam, whatever God does will endure forever. You can't add to it. You can't detract from it. God is in control. Elokim yaseh shirim lefanav. God has done this so that we should fear him. Elokim yavakesh etan yadav. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody would try to make the argument that this passage is articulated by the Yirei Elokim. This is full of God-fearing references. And on the other hand, it's so nihilistic, it's so self-centered about joy and pleasure and ein tov ma'asher yismach adam b'ma'asav, and fatalistic, that it's a difficult passage to put into the words of the Yirei Elokim. So we are left with a quandary. On the one hand, it is the Nehenatan, it is the one who is trying to enjoy this world. And on the other hand, there is a significant amount of reverence for God, reverence for heaven in this text that needs to be understood. Does everybody understand the challenge? Right? I presented essentially two almost contrasting themes that are emerging from this text. And we need to kind of figure out a way, because he starts with the Nanatan, and he ends with the Nanatan, but he starts with Simcha and ends with Simcha, and in the middle takes us on a journey. So we need to figure out what this journey is about. And I think the key, therefore, is going to lie at the center of this text, which if you just look at it graphically, okay, or schematically, right, what stands out as kind of jumps off the page at the center of this text, of course, is this song that appears in the middle, what we refer to as the Shir Ha'itim, the song of the seasons or the times. And Zman and Eid are interchangeable. One is called time, one is called season. You could translate them either way, but essentially they are referring to the same thing. And the question that we need to understand, the key to unlocking this parak, lies in understanding this song. So that's where our attention is going to turn for the good part of the remainder of this year. What's going on here? Everything there is a time, a season, or a season, a time for everything under the heavens. There is a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to destroy, a time to build, a time to cry, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. Yeah? Somebody wanted to know? Time for everything. So let's start with just text, structure. Where does this song end? Simple question. Where does the song, where it starts is easy. Starts at the beginning of Perek Gimel. This is my introductory statement. Everything has a time. Everything has a season. Everything has a purpose under the heaven. Fine. Where does it end? So this is a simple answer. The simple answer is
peace.
Time for war and a time for peace. And I have a very structured song. There's even a hint in the text itself that there is an end here, besides the fact that it ends the kind of the Shira part of it, right? The structure of the language, the repetition of the word, the two columns. If you look at the last phrase, Eit Mechama Ve'et Shalom, grammatically, the syntax of that phrase is different than the rest of the text. In the rest of the text, it's Eit La. It's a time for, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal. Eit Le, Eit Le, Eit Le, all the way through. Until the end. It doesn't say Eit li lachem ve'et lahashlim. It doesn't say a time to make war and a time to make peace. It says Eit milchama ve'et shalom. Time for war and a time for peace. Meaning there's a kind of a dramatic grammatical shift in that phrase that says we've just hit a stop point. Fine. The problem is, of course, is if that is the entire Shira, and I ask you, what is its message? Right? What is it trying to tell me? What is the conclusion of this song? What is it doing in Kohelet? What is its message here? That is a hard question to answer. You could make the argument that it's coming to tell me that, and the Mefarshim do, the Mefarshim look at this and they say, okay, it can mean many different things. Some suggest it means that there is, just show it to you in the Mefarshim, it will be easier to see. This you don't have on the source page, but you have it on the website. Rashi, L'kol Zaman, Rashi has a translation. Al Yismach Osef Behon Mehevel Ki Imachshav Ki Hu Biado Od Yershu Tzadikim. Let not one who accumulates possessions out of vanity rejoice. Because although he has them now, they will ultimately pass on to the righteous. Only the time has not yet arrived. Meaning, Rashi constantly splits this theme of et la lede. Let's do an example. talks about one for the righteous, one for the wicked. At the time, everything, all things are. Essentially, coming back, this will get interesting for us. Coming back to the theme of which he started in the previous parak, says Rashi, the Kohelet is dividing the world into two groups, the Tov and the Chote, the good and the sinner. And therefore, in the context of the world, there's those aspects of the world that are relevant to the Tov, Lifnei Elokim, to the righteous, and those aspects that are relevant to the wicked. That's more or less how Rashi kind of navigates through this text. But again, we're struggling with a text that doesn't seem to have a clear message, other than there's a time and place for everything. Okay? But what does that mean? What's the takeaway from that? So I'm actually more inclined to take the approach of most of the other Mefarshim, Ibn Ezra and others as well, to suggest that the text, the Shira, doesn't end here. And the reason the Shira doesn't end here is because even though this is the end of the poetic portion of the song, its message, its takeaway, its conclusion is two psukim later. In other words, if I start with the assertion, l'kol zman ve'et l'chol chepetz, there's a time, is a place for everything, and ask the question, why? Why is there a time and place for everything? Why is there a season to be born and a season to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot? Is it because sometimes I can be deserving to plant and deserving to uproot, or deserving to kill, or deserve to be, right? Is it based on me, says Kohelet? No. The conclusion of this song is in the next two verses, three verses. If in fact there is a season and a time and a season for everything, it means that ultimately I am not in control anymore. Who is in control? Who determines the eight, the time for being born and the time to die? Who determines what eight there is? Right? In the Shira itself, it doesn't say. It just says there is a time, there's a place, there's a season. L'chol chayfetz. Who makes the determination? What is the time to be born? And what is the time to die? And what is the time to embrace? And what is the time to destroy? And what is the time to build? Says Rashi, it's based on my righteousness. Says the Ibn Ezra, or most of the other Mefarshim. And Kohelet seems to say, no, it's not based on what I do. It's based on what God does. Yud Aleph. Et hakol asa yafeh be'ito. God has made everything beautiful in its time. That's the end of the shir. That's the conclusion of the song. There is an eight l'chol chevet. There's a time for everything. There's an eight for this and an eight for that and an eight for this and an eight for that. Because et hakol asa yafeh be'ito. Because God is running this world. And God is determining what is the best time for each of these items. And therefore, if I ask the question from Kohelet's perspective, Ma yitrono se b'asher u'amel, what profit is there to be gained by the effort and the toil and the labor, if in fact, right, that's nothing more than a tease, than an affliction, because ultimately I'm not in control. Who is in control, says Kohelet? Et hakol asa yafeh be'ito. God is in control. We may think we are masters of this world. We think we live forever. We think we have all the time in the world. We cannot possibly understand God's motivation, God's actions, God's picture of the world from beginning to end. We are not in control. And that's essentially the takeaway of Paragimel. We are not in control. God is entirely in control. It's the ultimate expression, this whole parak, an extraordinary expression of almost borders on a kind of deterministic or fatalistic perspective on the world. God runs this world from beginning to end. Now he does it beautifully, he says Kohelet, does it magnificently. Right? What a world that God has created for us. But what's our job? What's our task? And from Kohelet's vantage point, and this is where, right, again, this is one perspective which we're going to then navigate away from. But at this point in time, perspective is, right, God has made everything perfect. What's my job in this world? Yadati ki ein tov bam. My job is to enjoy it. I'm here, you'll forgive the expression, I'm here for the ride. God has put me in here, he has brought me to a perfect world, he runs this world, et kol ha'aseh yafeh b'ito, and I'm here for the ride. Ki ein tov bam ki im lismoach, lasot tov b'chayav, to rejoice, to do good. And if I'm able to do that, if I'm able to live and to enjoy and to benefit and to eat and to drink and be merry, Matata, look at me. What a gift from God that is. Because ultimately, I have no control, says Kohelet. Ma itron aser basher hu amel. That's the cornerstone of this perspective of the Nanatan. I'm not in control. And therefore, when I look at the world God put me into, I have to be the beneficiary of God's bounty, graciousness, goodness, and kindness, and everything he's bestowed upon me. It's matat elokim, but that's my task. Kol ashi yaseh elokim u'yeh le'olam. Whatever God does, he does forever. I have no ability to change God's actions. I love it in lo'osif, in le'groa. Even Yirat Elokim, even fear of God, is determined by God. Elokim asa yishiru milafana. What was will be. What will be was. I have no influence here. I have no ability to change it. Elokim yavakesh nidaf. If there's something going on and somebody's being pursued, the God will deal with it. I have no influence. I have no ability to change it. Says Kohelet. Ma yitrom basheru amel. My job is to enjoy it. In the smach, v'shiyachal tov. Now, you understand that I've painted this picture in an extreme, but that's exactly what Kohelet is doing here. He's painting a perspective at an extreme. And the perspective starts from this very deterministic perspective that says, I have no control. Ultimately, this world is run by God. Now, in and of itself, that can be a very good thing. Right? That can be a very positive perspective, religious perspective. On the other hand, it has built-in danger. We're going to see that danger because we're going to see in the second half of this paragraph what he does with that potential danger and how he runs from it. And so he'll kind of put this out there and then retract from it. But for now, he's taken this position that ultimately my job is to enjoy the world God has put me into. It's almost, and here I'm going to digress for a minute, it almost reads like the Medrash about the creation of the human being in chapter 1. I want to show you an interesting dichotomy. Let's jump for a moment to the source page down below. Should you have it as we looked at. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is mentioned, it's brought down in the Medrash in a number of places. Why was mankind created last? Tanu Rabbanan. Adam nivra be'erev Shabbat. Human being was created at the end of the creation story. Last chapter. Last day. End of the last day. Erev Shabbat. Right? If you go back to creation chapter, story in chapter, in Bereshit, Perek Aleph. Day one, he created the light and darkness. Day two, he created the land and the world and the heavens. Day three, he created the land and the sea. Day four, he created the fish. Right? Everything has its place. And day four, he created the luminaries of the sky. Then he created the fish on day five. Then he created the animals on day six. And the human being created at the very end. Why? So the Gemara offers various reasons for why the human being is created last. One reason is so that we shouldn't say that we were mortal, that we are immortal, that we were partners with God in the creation of the world, right? There's an element of idolatry in there, so the heretics would not be able to say that we partnered with God in the creation. Others suggest a sense of humility. If we get too arrogant with ourselves, then God can say to us, "Yatushk damach, you were preceded by the mosquito in the evolutionary stages of creation." It's a little bit of a wake up call. Then the Gemara says something else completely. Davar acher, another interpretation. Kidei shiyikanes l'su'uda miyad. So that a person should enter into the feast immediately. What feast are we talking about? Mashal l'melech basar v'adam. Shebena platerin v'shichlalan. Take a parable of a king who made flesh and blood, who makes beautiful palace, many palaces, improves them, a perfect palace. V'tkin suda, and in this palace he prepared a feast. A wonderful feast with all kinds of food and all kinds of produce and all kinds of vegetation, all kinds of whatever you want in this feast. And then he invited the guests. You don't invite the guests and then set the table. Right? You wouldn't invite the guest and then set the table. You set the table first and then you invite the guest. You don't invite the guest and then prepare the food. You prepare the food first and then invite the guest. Says the Medrash, in a sense, in Kohelet, that's exactly what he's saying. God created the world. Let's go back to Bereishit Perek Aleph. In Bereishit Perek Aleph, sorry, I jumped to the wrong page. In Bereishit Perek Aleph, God created the world. Bereishit Bara Elokim et Hashamayim et Haaretz. He created the land and the sea, created the fish and the animals, and he created day one and day two and day three and day four, and everything is set. The world is perfect, and on day... Then he has vegetation, then he has food, then he has animals to enjoy that food. And, okay, but it's all done. We're going to make the human being. And this human being is going to enter into this world. And you know what this human being is going to do in this world? This human being is going to enjoy this world, master it, and benefit from it. He will master this fish of the sea and the birds of the sky and the animals on the earth. Vayivarechotam, God creates human being, blesses the human being, and says, "Pruvu, be fruitful, multiply, milu at haaretz, fill the earth, kivshua, conquer it, urdu betkatayam, and conquer the world." And then, I've given you every kind of vegetation. And I've given you every kind of fruit. And I've given all of that to you. Lachem iyeh leochla. To eat it. The world is yours. I placed you in this world. It's perfect. I created it. I mastered it. I direct it. Hakol asa yefeh v'ito. Human being enters into this arena, says Kohelet, for the sole purpose of Yismach. The whole eat, drink, to enjoy the world that God has given it. Perfect world, man is there to enjoy it. So says Kohelet. It's actually, there's a very famous debate between Rabbi Akiva and the Roman tyrant referred to as Turnus Rufus or Tinius Rufus, in which they have this whole philosophical debate about the nature of man in the world. Familiar with that, I'm sure. The debate revolves around circumcision because that was part of the historical conflict. But the Medrash describes a question that Turnus Rufus asked Rabbi Akiva. Maaseh she'shaal Turnus Rufus hashrashat Rabbi Akiva. What was the question? Eizo maasim na'im shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu or shel basar v'dam? Whose deeds are greater, God's or man's? Now, you could say, it's not a fair question. Of course, God created the world. What does man do? Right? Man, little four corners of the world, man can make a lot of trouble, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. But Rabbi Akiva saw the trap. So Rabbi Akiva responded and said, Amalo shel basar v'dam na'im. Man's deeds are greater. Turnus Rufus turns to him and he says, Reshamayim v'aretz yechol adam lasot. Can man make heaven and earth? So Rabbi Akiva says to him, you know what, let's bring the conversation a little bit closer down. We have no control over the heavens and earth. Let's talk about something which is in man's control. Fine. So Tenesufa says, so why are you not circumcised? In other words, it's all about circumcision, because ultimately in the mitzvah of Brit Milah, we are told to change the world that God created. God created a perfect world. Why are we commanded to change it? And so, okay, so Rabbi Akiva gives him an example from bread, right? God created wheat, but we create bread. So we improve on the world that God created. But from the Kohelet's perspective, there's a certain amount of truth in the words of Turnus Rufus over that of Rabbi Akiva. Why are we fiddling with the world that God created? We should be here to benefit from. We should be here, as described in Perek Aleph, to receive the world that God has created, to walk into the feast and enjoy it and accept it and acknowledge God and say thank you instead of trying to change it all the time, right? So there's a certain philosophical argument that Ternasufis makes that essentially is reflected in these words of Kohelet. God has made this world perfect. What are you trying to change it for? I would even go so far as to say, and again, I'm putting the controversial side out there, and then we'll, as Rav Hashem next week, kind of balance it. But there's even a certain perspective that this is reflected in the opening statement of Misilat Yesharim. Misilat Yesharim is a fascinating text, Path of the Righteous by the Ramchal. Misilat Yesharim is a very classic, famous philosophical text in Jewish thought. And he asks the question of what is man's purpose? Yesod haChasidut, v'shorash haAvodah Tmima, the source of foundation of piety, the root of perfect service of God. What is man's purpose? Ma chovato ba'olam. And he writes in the second paragraph, this is chapter one, second paragraph. Ma shehorunu chachamenu zichronam livrachahu, she'adam lo nivra ela leit'aneg al Hashem v'le'enot miziv shkinato. Man's purpose is to delight, to derive pleasure from the presence of God. Like David HaMelech writes, Kivat Elokim Litov, the goodness is in the closeness to the Shechina. Zeo ha'ta'anuga amiti, this is the truest pleasure, delight that a person has. V'idun ha'gadol mikol ha'idunim sheyicholim limatzeh. And therefore, right, there's a whole philosophical world that says that our purpose is to derive pleasure from this world, but that pleasure gets translated into a presence of God. It's not pleasure in this world, it's pleasure in the next world. And so he concludes, Olam hazeh domeh, based on the Mishnah Pirkei Avot, Olam hazeh domeh lepozdo, bipnei olam haba. This world is like an entrance way, a corridor into the next world. But in the next world, we sit in the presence of the Shekhinah, and we benefit from the presence of the Shekhinah. That's what Misilat Yesharim says. That's exactly what Kohelet said. Our purpose is to recognize that God put us in this world to enjoy it and to enjoy the presence of God. It's a gift from God. It's from God. So of course we should enjoy it. However, there's a problem here. What's the problem? This whole philosophy that we've established here ignores two things. It ignores, number one, I've described chapter one of Bereshit very clearly. Man is created last in order to benefit the eat of this world. It ignores chapter two, in which man is created first, and which man is told to work the world, lo'ovda, and to guard it, l'shomra. And man is given a task and a challenge. Chapter one does not give man any challenge other than to enjoy the world. Le'ochla. Chapter two gives man the challenge of the task of improving the world. Le'ovda. To work it, to guard it, to protect it, to enhance it. That's a very different role. And this presentation of Kohelet ignores it completely. That's number one. Number two, there's a certain self-centered perspective on this philosophy of Mesilat Yesharim that says that man's purpose is to just enjoy the world that God has created for. Rav Kook talked about, Rav Kook actually critiques this opening passage of Mesilat Yesharim. Anybody's familiar with it, it's a very powerful piece. And Rav Kook writes in Avot HaKodesh that when you start the first chapter of Mesilat Yesharim, if you don't understand it, if you just take it literally and take it at face value, when he says that the purpose is to enjoy God's world, it creates a very self-centered perspective of religiosity. Religiosity is all about my portion of the world to come, my mitzvot, my chelik, my... There's no giving there, there's no contribution, there's no building. And he writes, this is unbelievable, he writes, Nislad ha-chush ha-musari shelanu. Our moral sensitivity becomes diminished by the egocentric, self-centered world of desire to be benefit from the presence of the Shekhinah, of Avat HaTanuk. And we're looking for something greater, something pure, something clean and aki, from any kind of personal self-centered involvement. So Rav Kook himself recognized that this perspective of Mesilat Yesharim by and of itself is complicated, and that's exactly what Kohelet presents. God made a perfect world, a kol ha'asa yafeh bi'ito, and our task is to enjoy it. Let me ask you the question differently. Okay, and with this I'll conclude, because we're going to ask the question today, we're going to answer it next week, so... I told you the story of the Yabar Benel, who, the person who became a heretic by reading the Yabar Benel. Right? So if I ask the question this week, you have to come back next week. Otherwise, you'll lose the answer. That would be dangerous. But let me ask the question this way. If I go back to Bereshit Perek Aleph, what essentially I'm arguing is that mankind being created here on day six and being charged with the goal to be fruitful and multiply and consume l'ochla, why is man in this regard any different than the animals that came before him? How is man any different than the animals that came before him? The animals were also told to master the domain in which they were created. Animals were also told to consume other vegetation and sources and consumption. What makes the human being different? If he's created, there's an evolutionary process. So we start with fish and we end with birds, and then we go to animals, and then we go to the human being. And what makes the human being any different from the animals? What's the answer? The Torah's answer is there's a tzelem elokim. There's an element of divineness in the human being that's described here. Vayivra elokim et adam b'tzalmo. Kohelet's answer is, surprise, surprise, there is no difference between the human being and the animals that came before him. In this passage, in the end of this text, because the animals die and the human being dies. Therefore, if man's conclusion is man's task is to eat and to drink and to be and to enjoy the world, right? Then in fact he's no different than the animals. And so Kohelet writes, they are like animals. Animals die, people die. So what benefit does the human being have over the animal kingdom that came before him? Everything ends up in the same grave. That's Kohelet's conclusion. We're in trouble. If that's where Kohelet stops, we're in serious trouble. So we went from, and I want to understand this transition because we're going to open with this next week. We went from a description of an individual who looks at the world through the eyes of God has made a perfect world. We, totally fatalistic, totally deterministic. God controls the times. God controls the seasons. God controls history. God controls my life. He's presented, placed me in this world like Gan Eden. He's placed me in this world to receive, to benefit, to eat, to drink, and to enjoy God's presence. Kimetat alakimi. That's amazing. And then he concludes that therefore man is like the animal kingdom that came before him. And man's no better than the animals, and therefore he eats and drinks and has instincts just like the animals, and that's the end of it. And that's all there is. And that's really an unconscionable position to be left in. How we got from a individual who's eating as if he's enjoying the presence of the Shekhinah, the presence of the divine directly. He's eating and drinking because it is matata lakim, because it's a gift from God. How we get from there to the notion that the human being is no better than the animals that came before him, that's a journey. And that's the journey we're going to explore next week. We're going to look at both the positive and the negative side of this journey. And then from there, we will come to the conclusion that Kohelet comes to, which is in Perek Daled, that if that is the way in which you see life, then I don't want to have any part of it. Meaning, this is one of the best examples of what we will see, which is the conflict, the tension between the voices of Kohelet. Perek Gimel is entirely the voice of the Nenatan, and the characteristic traits of this hedonist or this Nenatan is that he is not in control of the world. If there's a one sentence summary of the ideological framework of the Nehaneh, it is that he is not in control of the world. Ma itron aseh vasher hu amel. And because he's not in control, he starts with a position that says, okay, so God put me here for a purpose. It must be to just derive benefit, to just enjoy. Enjoy the ride. Until he realizes that he can't do that. And why he can't do that, that's something we have to explore. So we've started our exploration of chapter 3. There's much more to unpack. But I will stop sharing here, and I will take questions. I hope that has been, as I said at the outset of the shiur, today's shiur is not going to be an inspirational shiur. It's going to be we're getting into the tension of Kohelet. So these are going to be sort of challenging chapters to get through, but eventually he will resolve much of that tension.
Is it possible that it's not that the chapter is all of the Nen Natan, but it's all four characters who are kind of talking to each other in different ways. The one literary point that strikes me in that sense is in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Matat Elohim Hi, very close between the word matat as a gift to mitat elokim hi, that in the sense of it's God who determines that we die.
So I'll tell you two things. I'll agree and disagree with your words in some way, reflection. I don't think Matat Elokim Hi refers to death here, because it's really the parallel to the verse earlier, the end of Perek Bet, which is Kimi Yad Elokim Hi. And you'll see the context, and if you look at Perek Bet Pasuk Chof Daled, you'll see it's exactly the same context there. So I don't think that that's the meaning of the phrase. He hasn't really referred to that death in terms of something caused by God. His retraction from this position is based more on the issue of injustice in this world, and what do we do with injustice in this world when man is oppressing man. So we'll talk about that next week. On the other hand, it is possible to look at Kohelet as a series of voices that are kind of arguing with each other. That's more or less the difference between Rav Meidan's interpretation of the text and Rav Yoel ben Nun. They both agree on the basic four voices that are happening. Rav Meidan tends to look at them more in terms of individual speeches reacting to each other, sort of Eov style. Whereas Rav Yoel tends to look at them more in terms of a dialogue conversation. Some verses expressed by one, another verse by another, sometimes a verse expressed by two or three of them. That's much more complicated to understand and to teach. So I've always been biased to Rav Meidan's interpretation because I think it's much easier, much cleaner to see the whole structure of the text. But they both, you know, they've both been recorded and written about, so you know, they're both out there. But I tend to look at them more in terms of individual speeches rather than kind of intense dialogue, one talking over the other. You know, much as you get when you listen to a news program and the moderator tries to talk over the guests, and you know, it happens a lot. All right, any other questions?
Rabbi,
yeah.
Is Kohelet saying to us that we are not as important as we think we are, that God created this world, but it's not just for us?
I don't think that's where he's going, at least not here. But here he's going is the exact opposite. God created the world just for us. And then he's going to get into trouble because we don't behave nicely to each other. And when we don't behave nicely to each other, his theory falls apart. But suddenly you can't say the world is so perfect and beautiful when we are oppressing each other and killing each other. And so, hang on a second. All right, I'm just going to do this for 1 second. So he'll retract a little bit from that position on the basis of you know, works in theory, it works perfectly in the natural world. It doesn't work when there are other human beings around, right? And suddenly we get complex. But I don't think he retracts the sense of we being created, that the world was created for the human being. I think that that's reflected in the opening two chapters of Bereshit. And what we're going to see is that he's kind of navigating between those two chapters. We talked a lot about the role of Gan Eden in the mindset of Shlomo HaMelech. This chapter kind of pulls back from the Gan Eden story and talks about chapter one, right? Where man is the pinnacle of creation, not, he's not given a charge to, or a job to do in the world. He's given the benefit of the world. So I think but he's still focused on the role of the human being as the pinnacle of that process.
The proof Rabbi, of what that. What do you say about in Bereshit when Eve says she created with God? You know, so when Cain was born.
Yeah, we can talk about that. That's a different. You have to work off the Hebrew rather than translations. We can talk about that. Another time, if you send me an email and I'll have that discussion with you. It's not really relevant to this piece now, but, if you send me an email, I'll be happy to share with you, the Hebrew in its translation.
The proof of what you're saying is, Noah, where the world is destroyed. You know, why were the animals and the everything else destroyed if it wasn't? If the whole point of it isn't for
man to do something with it. For sure. A lot to unpack. We'll get there. Just have to come back because I don't want to leave you. We're going to have lots of these classes where we're going to leave with a big question. Got to come back so we can keep going. All right. We will see you all next week. Stay safe. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Enjoy the
thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
My pleasure.